From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Chief among the many rallying cries in the wake of the disastrous 2016 presidential election were calls to abolish the Electoral College system in the U.S. Donald Trump lost the popular vote by nearly 3 million. But scraped by with just enough gains in the right states to win the Electoral College vote and become president with a minority mandate. Only the fourth time such a thing has happened in U.S. history. The original intent of the founders was to undermine the direct election of a president by popular vote because they were afraid that a demagogue would rise to power through manipulating the public. Little did they know that in 2016, a demagogue was able to use the Electoral College to achieve the same ends. Now, a new and little-known nationwide effort has taken root to end the power of the Electoral College in our presidential elections. It's called the National Popular Vote, and here is former Labor Secretary and author Robert Reich explaining exactly how it works.
While we resist Donald Trump, we also need to make sure our democracy doesn't ever again elect a candidate who loses the popular vote. We must abolish the Electoral College. Now, as you probably know, the Constitution assigns each state a number of electors based on the state's population. The total number of electors is 538. So anyone who gets 270 of those Electoral College votes becomes president, regardless of the popular vote. So how do we abolish the Electoral College? Amending the Constitution is very hard, requiring a two-thirds vote by the House and Senate, plus approval by three-quarters of state legislatures. But we can make the Electoral College irrelevant without a constitutional amendment. Here's how. Article 2 of the Constitution says states can award their electors any way they want. So all that's needed is for states with a total of at least 270 electors to agree to award all their electoral votes to the presidential candidate who wins the popular vote. If they do that, then automatically the winner of the popular vote gets the 270 electoral votes he or she needs to become president. Already, 10 states and the District of Columbia have passed laws to do exactly this, awarding all their electoral votes to the candidate who wins the popular vote as soon as the 270 elector goal is met. Together, these states total 165 electoral votes. So all we need now is some additional states with 105 electors to pass the same law, agreeing to reward all their electoral votes to the winner of the popular vote. And it's done. We'll never again elect a president who loses the popular vote. The effort is known as the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. If your state hasn't yet joined on, make sure it does.
And that is former Labor Secretary and prominent progressive activist Robert Reich explaining this effort to end the power of the Electoral College. We turn now to Patrick Rosensteel. He's senior consultant to National Popular Vote, Inc. Welcome to the program, Patrick.
Oh, thanks. Grateful to be here.
So we just heard Robert Reich explaining what this National Popular Vote Pact is. It's pretty incredible and innovative. It was the first time that I'd heard about it when someone posted this to Facebook, but this is a movement that's been afoot. Can you explain how it all started and how far it's actually gotten?
Oh, yeah, sure. Happy to. You know, I think Dr. Koza, who's our chairman, first drafted up some of the language around the Interstate Compact in 2005. We were in front of the first legislative bodies in 2006. And just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Connecticut became the 12th state to adopt the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. So we have states with 172 electoral votes that have passed our bill. You know, to understand the compact is to understand we need states with 98 more to reach the 270 electoral vote threshold, at which point it triggers, and we get to elect the president of the United States by a national popular vote, and we get to fix a system that's been broken for quite some time, you know, to make every voter in every state politically relevant in every presidential election. So The reason it started is because too many American voters are left on the sideline, Republican, Democrat, or independent in presidential years. We believe a national popular vote for president can fix that problem so that a voter in North Dakota is as important to the American president as a voter in the battleground state of Florida. And we believe that the compact is the constitutionally appropriate way because the legislature has the authority and the power under the U.S. Constitution to address this problem if they believe it exists.
Right. So right now, for example, in California, where I'm based, our program is based, come general election time during a presidential election year, we get very little campaigning by candidates because it's a state that's been written off as reliably Democratic. The same goes for states that are written off as reliably Republican. And it's in those few swing states where the vote could go here or there that get the greatest attention from candidates and also sort of have their issues be made more important. So I know Californians always complain about really not being considered very much during the general election. If this were to go through, if enough states whose electoral college votes added up to 270 agreed to put all of their votes towards the winner of the popular election, then you would have to have candidates, or candidates would have to feel that they needed to win over every single individual vote, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, what we do is replace a system of battleground states and flyover states with a system where every American voter becomes a battleground state voter. And, you know, the problem is the influence of the battleground state, right? So right now, if you read any political news, you read about, you know, sort of the threat of the trade war and what that might mean for rural economies in the Midwest or the American South or export-based economies like Oregon and California. And the reason we're in the middle of a trade war is because the current president, President Trump, needed to figure out a way to win Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, Rust Belt areas of Rust Belt states, in order to win those states to be elected president under the current state-based winner-take-all system. Now, under a national popular vote system, it's not that trade-related issues are not going to be important. They're just not going to be decided in a parochial vacuum where the interests of battleground state voters are placed ahead of the interests of every other voter in the country. So, you know, battleground states are twice as likely, for example, to get exemptions from programs like No Child Left Behind, and they're more likely to get presidentially controlled grants, more likely to get disasters declared. And I know that's a big deal in a lot of places, but certainly near and dear to the hearts of the voters of California. A battleground state is twice as likely to get a natural disaster declared as a flyover state is. And that's simply because of the state-based winner-take-all law that the national popular vote proposal replaces. And we just believe that battleground state issues will be on equal footing, not as flyover state issues in a presidential campaign, if we move to a national popular vote system for electing
presidents. So some of the numbers you just gave show that it's not just about how things are distributed during a general election, but year round between elections, swing states and battleground states, as they're called, seem to be favored because of this power that they have through the Electoral College system. So what are some of the states that have already joined in? So we said 11 states adding up to 165 electoral votes, and among them, New York and California have already joined. So those are two big states with big numbers of electoral college votes. What are some of the other states that have joined?
Well, and I'm sorry, maybe I sent you some old information because Connecticut just joined 3 weeks ago.
That's right.
Yeah, we're at 12 states now with 172 electoral votes. And so we need 98 more electoral votes for the compact to take effect and the proposal to trigger. We've got small states, we've got medium-sized states, and we've got big states. And you rattled off a few. Mm-hmm. What's important to understand is this is not a partisan approach to a nonpartisan problem, right? It's a nonpartisan approach to a nonpartisan problem, or a bipartisan approach to a nonpartisan problem. So we've passed, for example, the House of Representatives in the Republican state of Arizona, and we passed the Oklahoma Senate because, you know, look, Republicans and Democrats alike are tired of being trapped behind, you know, either the blue wall or the red wall, you know, depending on what flyover state they live in. So
So, and in fact, I understand that one of the founder of National Popular Vote identifies as a Republican.
Oh, one of them does, and I mean, okay. This is a reform that enjoys. So, you know, Donald Trump supports a national popular vote for president, right? So does Hillary Clinton.
He does?
Newt Gingrich supports, you know, sort of a national popular vote and the national popular vote in interstate compact, as does Nancy Pelosi, right? So, you know, we got Michael Steele on board and Howard Dean. You know, anytime you can get sort of, you know, bipartisan support to a significant nonpartisan issue, you know, it's something that that everybody should take relatively seriously. Do their homework, maybe at nationalpopularvote.com, figure out whether you're for or against this idea, and weigh in with your state legislator.
So in addition to Connecticut, which was the latest state to join this compact, the 12th state, we have Rhode Island, Vermont, Hawaii, the District of Columbia, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Illinois, New York, California. That leaves still plenty of states, behind that are able to join this. Are there places where states are now, state legislative bodies are now considering passing a bill to join in?
Oh yeah, we have bills introduced in every legislative session, mm-hmm. in every state that has not adopted the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. We've passed one chamber or another in a number of states where we continue to work on those states. Arizona and Oklahoma are two great examples of that. Certainly we've been active in a lot of places. We have bills dropped in all 50, well, not all 50 states anymore because we've passed 12. But, the truth is we've got our shoulder to the wheel at National Popular Vote until this work is done in a bipartisan fashion to fix the problems with the current system and move to a national popular vote for president. I don't make any predictions about what state might fall next, but we certainly are active on a daily basis trying to get this job done. And the reason we're so successful is because the American people of all stripes, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, conservatives, liberals, and moderates are tired of a system where battleground state voters have all the power, flyover state voters have none. And the reason we're successful is because folks are willing to weigh in with their legislature, which is where you need to call if you want to get your shoulder to the wheel.
Right. So for people who might live in one of the states that I didn't mention, where this hasn't, and I meant to mention Washington as well, is one of the states that has passed it. So aside from the states that I mentioned, there are efforts, and people can simply contact their state legislatures, find out if there's a bill, and urge them to support it and push those lawmakers to start holding hearings on it and actually holding votes.
Yeah, and also if you go to nationalpopularvote.com and if you click on your state, it will have sort of the legislative vehicle that was most recently under consideration in that state. It'll have the name of the chief author. If you go to our Write Legislator page, which is a great way to do this, you can type in your zip code. If you need to figure out who your state legislator is, write them a note. But there is state by state history of the National Popular Vote Bill in all 50 states in the District of Columbia. So if you're interested in knowing where your state is, that's a great place to go, and you can gather the information there.
Right. So right on the top of the website is a list of links to states, and you can just click on your link to find out what the status of your particular state is, and if who you need to contact in order to push for it if you think this is a good idea. When did this effort start, Patrick? I'm wondering about the pace of these bills passing.
I think we wrote the bill in 2005. I think it went before its first legislatures in 2006. And I think the first state passed the bill in 2007. And so, you know, the pace of change is actually pretty swift if you consider the fact that, the Civil Rights Act took, 30 years to pass. I mean, we like the progress we're making. We feel very good about the fact that we've come a long ways in a short period of time. And we're confident that the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact is going to be in law in enough states to have a national popular vote election. I don't make predictions about 2016, 2020, 2024. I just know that we're going to be there until it's done. And we feel great about the progress we're making.
And given that in 2016, so 10 years after you started this effort, we had the fourth time in U.S. history where a president won the Electoral College but lost the popular vote. I wonder if that's given greater impetus to these efforts states in states.
Well, I mean, look, divergence elections have happened, right? That's what they call them in political science. And, you know, we don't make any guesses about what would have happened in a 2016 election if there was a national popular vote election, right? Two-thirds of the campaign happens in just six states under the current system. In a national popular vote, I'm sure that Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Trump, or President Trump, would have run their campaigns completely differently. And there would be an outcome, you know, and whoever won the most votes would win. You know, certainly it raised awareness about what we were doing, you know, and you know, we have capitalized on that awareness in terms of educating the public. But, you know, we've been at this for a little while. This isn't about one election or another. This is about every presidential election. Too many voters in America don't feel like they have a legitimate stake in the outcome of the election. And we need to fix that problem for every presidential.
You mentioned two-thirds of the campaigning takes place in six states. That's insane.
Yeah, in 2016, and 94% of the campaign happened in just 12. So, you know,
wow.
The idea that national popular vote election in 2016 and Hillary Clinton would have been elected president ignores the fact that if you change the system, you change the nature of the campaign, and you couldn't possibly know what that outcome was going to be. We're just not afraid, meaning the proponents of reform here, we're not afraid to have a system where the candidates take their message to all the American people, and the candidate with the best message for all the American people is elected president. And we think that candidates ought be forced to campaign the interests of ruby red Oklahoma and bright blue Connecticut and every state in between. And whoever's got the best message of resonance ought to be elected president of the United States. And right now we're simply electing a president of the battleground states.
So Patrick, what do you
I'd say real quick that mm-hmm. was true for Barack Obama. That was every bit as true for Barack Obama as it is for Donald Trump. And it was every bit as true for George W. Bush as it was for Bill Clinton, right? They all campaigned to the battleground states. Yeah. And we think that's a tragedy.
I mean, and that's by design. You can't blame them for doing so, given the current system. How do you respond to the argument that the Electoral College system is designed to protect those teeny tiny small states against the big states like California and Texas and New York?
Well, I respond to it by saying it's simply not true. I mean, the current system marginalizes small states unlike any other system could. So, for example, the 10 smallest states in the country, right, for the last 20 years, no Republican or Democratic candidate for president during the general election campaign has gone to any of the 10 smallest states in this country. And it's because five of them are reliably blue and Democratic and five of them are reliably red. So it's the current system that marginalizes small states. Now, national popular vote will make a voter in North Dakota or Vermont every bit of relevant as a voter in Volusia County, Florida, and the current system cannot fulfill that promise. So if you want to make small state voters matter, if you want to make rural voters matter in every presidential election, if you want to make suburban and urban voters matter, no matter what state they live in, right, national popular vote is the only way to do that. And the right way to move to a national popular vote is through the state-based compact that you can read at nationalpopularvote.com.
Now, some might say that this is anti, you know, having a national popular vote like this would disadvantage Republicans because it's, you know, because of because we've seen, you know, more sort of minority rule in some state levels, and also given Trump won the Electoral College vote but lost the popular vote, do you, for those Republicans who might be listening?
Well, look, you have a Republican on your Skype cast right now. I mean, I've carried more water for the elephant than most. You know, the truth is I'm a Republican who's not afraid of my ideas. I'd certainly like to take our ideas to the entire American people in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. We've got a vibrant message of hope and growth and opportunity, and I think the Democrats have a vibrant message of their own. I have no fear about sort of Republicans being able to compete in a first-past-the-post system where the candidate with the most votes wins in a single-member district called the United States of America. And the truth is we need to find, I'm tired of my party, the Republican Party, getting transactional with battleground state voters under the current system. Like I said just before, I sort of agree with President Trump. I think if we had a national popular vote for president, he would have run his campaign completely differently. And I'm not convinced that Hillary Clinton would have won that campaign. But look, I'm not here to talk about politics. I'm here to talk about a systemic problem with a systemic solution that is the national popular vote interstate compact. I come from a philosophy of, let's get the best candidates with the best ideas out there talking to the American people and the citizens they want to represent. And I'm not afraid to create an environment where we line up and beat each other. And when the American people select the Republican or the Democratic candidate for president, I'd just like to know that as a Republican in a blue state like Minnesota, I've been able to cast my ballot. I feel like I've been a relevant participant in that effort, and my candidate won or lost, I can accept that, right? The current system might get ignored.
Hmm. Well, Patrick, give out that website again, just in case people don't remember.
Yeah, no, it's nationalpopularvote.com, and get engaged. Tell them if you want one, tell them you want one. If you don't want one, tell them you don't want one, but this is not going away.
Right.
We think every voter in every state should be relevant in the next presidential election, and we're hopeful that can occur.
Patrick, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to do it. Thank you.
Patrick Rosensteel, senior consultant to National Popular Vote, Inc. We've been discussing this innovative effort to end the stranglehold of the Electoral College. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.